We finished up a study last year on looking at the global consequences of the movement of new variants of stem rust around the world called UG99. It was a new variant that was discovered in Uganda back in 1988-1999 and is spreading around the world but hasn't quite made it to Australia yet, but could well do. I mean, there's been historical occurrences of this problem in Australia. And so that generated a sort of benchline amount of investment that should be going in to stem rust. Our estimates were that we should be putting at least about $50 to $52 million a year, year in and year out, into averting the losses from stem rust. And it immediately raised the question, well, what about other pests and diseases that affect wheat, in particular stripe rust? Do we know how much we should be spending on stripe rust? No one knew the answer to that. And so we were commissioned by CIMMYT, which is the International Wheat and Maize Centre based in Mexico, to work with them and other partners, including the Gates Foundation, the Bulog Global Rust Initiative and others, which reaches back into Australia. It involves scientists at CSIRO and at the University of Sydney and elsewhere, to do the analysis, put the data together to try and find whether we could right-size the investments going into stripe rusts and see whether we should be spending more or less on that form of rust as opposed to stem rust.
Well, $50 to $52 million for stem rust, is there that amount of research actually going into it?
No, it doesn't sound, or to some maybe it doesn't sound like a big number, and to others maybe a big number. The sorry state of affairs is that as best we could estimate, that was about double the amount of spending that was going into stem rust. And that was including a sort of ramping up of interest in stem rust through investments made by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the development agency DFID in the United Kingdom, and a few others sort of rallied around to start putting money into this disease that hadn't been there in the past. But by our estimates were they weren't putting enough in on that. And so, as I say, the question is, are we putting enough in with respect to stripe rust?
Well, how much are we putting in at the moment?
We're still crunching the numbers, unfortunately. So I suspect it's probably, in terms of the amount we're investing, it's probably about the same that we're investing on stem rust, but possibly even a bit less, because stem rust has got this sort of attention of the politicians and the farm community. I mean, when I did the earlier study last year for stem rust, I was staggered to talk to some of the leading scientists around the world. And before this recent resurgence of interest in stem rust, funders had lost interest in this area. And in fact, it got down to probably literally half a dozen people around the world that were seriously working on the disease. There was a presumption that we'd sort of been there and done that and solved that problem, not realising that pests and diseases continue to co-evolve around the resistance genes that we build into these crops. And so, in fact, it's a never-ending biological rat race, if you will. You may control it through chemicals or management practices or breeding, but you don't suspend the co-evolutionary pressure. There's always Mother Nature trying to invent her way around the resistance we build into these crops. And so the sort of major line that we took in the study is that you have to not only just increase the investment in this area, stem rust or stripe rust or other pests and diseases that affect crops, but you have to sustain that investment over a very long period of time because of this very nature of the biological basis of agricultural production just requires that sort of research. In the trade, in economics, we call it maintenance research. That is, you have to actually have to invest money just to maintain the current yields you've got, let alone increase the yields, because if you don't maintain those current yields, you'll get this co-evolutionary response happen, and as I say, you'll get these new forms of old diseases pop up, and they'll act to drop yields below what we currently experience.
Is there the investment dollars out there to go into research like this to maintain it year after year?
Yeah, I think there are, and it's a question of deciding how to spend those dollars. And that's part of what the work I'm doing for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, jointly with the International Food Policy Research Institute in Washington, D.C., is to try and provide evidence-based choices and decision-making for them and others to decide just literally how much you should put into research in total, but equally importantly, what's the nature of the portfolio? Should be putting more or less into certain problems on certain crops in certain locations. And so It's as much a matter of getting the allocation of the research resources across the problems appropriately sized and scaled as putting the total amount of dollars into research. Unfortunately, here in Australia and elsewhere in the developed world, governments have been cutting back their overall investments in food and agricultural R&D, and you know, stepping back even more generically, I see very worrying signs of a slowdown in productivity growth here in Australia, where I'm currently resident in the US. Same thing's happening there. And it's no surprise to me, because what we've been seeing is decades now of governments basically backing off their commitments to agricultural R&D. And so the consequence of that is that we haven't been able to sustain the productivity growth rates that we saw back in the 1960s and 1970s through into the 2000s, because we just haven't been investing in the research. All the work I do shows that, you know, one refrain I get from people is that, well, we've done all of the easy things and now we have to invest a lot of money just to get a small gain. The evidence doesn't suggest that at all. The agricultural economies that we're servicing are larger now than they were 40 or 50 years ago. So that means that the economic gains from research investments could well be as much now as they were then, and all of the economic evidence suggests that's the case. So it's not true that it's more costly and the gains are less. The evidence suggests that the gains are just as much as high now as they were in yesteryear. It's just a matter of sustaining the political will to do that. It's not a very sexy thing, I think, investing in agricultural R&D where the payoffs to that research take decades to play their hand out. So it's not something politicians, I guess, can get a lot of immediate payback in terms of showing a return to that investment over a year or two period, which is their election cycle. The payoffs are much longer than that, but they're certainly very substantial.
What do you make then of the government saying that Australia is going to be the food bowl of Asia when it's not investing in R&D, or rather it's cutting back in research and development?
Right, there's a contradiction in policy objectives there. If that's the objective, then to realise those objectives, you're going to have to invest in the efforts to achieve that. Australia's been quite innovative in trying to sort of mobilise alternative forms of support through the research development corporations, endpoint royalties, and things of that nature. But it's still the case that there are these fundamental sort of long-run investments that you need to make. And I think the stem and the stripe rust examples are good examples of that. There's a lot of basic biology and deep sort of genetics and genomic science that you need to do to sort of identify resistance genes in plants and to sort of track and identify the evolutionary path of the fungi that are affecting these crops. That's not the sort of research where there's a quick payback, and so it's not very attractive for the private sector to engage in that type of research. So it's a matter of thinking about public and private research more as complements rather than substitutes. And a lot of people I talk to think, oh, it doesn't matter that we're backing off on the public sector because the private sector will fill in to the breach. But the private sector are in the business of making money. And if they can't appropriate the returns to that research in a sufficiently short period of time, it's not the type of research that they're like to be interested in investing in. But that doesn't mean that collective action by taxpayers and governments through longer term research that underpins that private research doesn't also have high returns. And as I say, there are literally hundreds of studies on the economic returns to research. And in fact, we've just at this conference, one of my colleagues is presenting a review of all of those studies. And the evidence suggests from that that we are still persistently underinvesting in public sector agricultural R&D here in Australia, but elsewhere in the world as well.
You're saying that stem rust, the research into that should be valued at, what, $50, $52 million?
Mm-hmm.
Are we expecting that will be around the same for stripe rust?
Yeah, as I say, we're still crunching the numbers and we're probably a month or two away from the results. But I'd guess we're going to be, you know, we might be a little higher, a little less, but we'll probably be up in that sort of range. And as you mentioned, it's not prospective losses from stem rust that we're talking about here. It's actual losses from stripe rust that are occurring today. There's sort of a more compelling, in my mind, justification for sort of putting money in that area, perhaps than even on the stem rust story, which is not yet to play its hand out in Australia, but If it does, I mean, as best I'm aware, the historical occurrences of stem rust in Australia were preceded by outbreaks in South Africa. The fungal spores travel at 30,000 feet across thousands of miles of ocean, and the prevailing winds brought them over from Africa in the past. And unfortunately, stem rust has now moved into South Africa. So there's all the preconditions there for stem rust to find its way to Australia as well.
And how big a problem is stripe rust for Australian wheat farmers?
That's the number we're trying to crunch right now. So part of the way we do the analysis is to first to come up with estimates about what the yield losses are associated with the disease, and then we do some calculations to figure out how much research investment could be justified to avert those losses, and then that gives us an indication of what the amount of research dollars should go into to avoid those losses.
So in terms of developing disease-resistant crops?
Yeah, either you can lower the costs, you can control these diseases with fungicides, but they're pretty expensive, or you can control them through breeding in resistance genes into those crops. And so hopefully the lower the costs of controlling the diseases through breeding, that's where you get the payoff from investing in new genetics to substitute the biology for costly chemicals.
And so by March you'll have a figure of how much investment is actually going into stripe rust or how much should be?
Right, there's a large international conference being convened in Mexico at the International Wheat and Maize Improvement Centre called CIMMET. And we're working hard to get our numbers together to unveil at that conference. And, that's our intent, is to unveil what our final number is. But as I said earlier, I suspect it'll be in the range, maybe a little more, a little less. I just don't quite know yet until we finalise the numbers. But certainly there are losses being occurred here in Australia and elsewhere in the world that justify some investments in research.